Bowery Capital Startup Sales Podcast.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. This week, we have Chris Spooner, who is the SVP of Finance at Rubicon. He's been with Rubicon for over 6 years now, and he joined the company when it was just about 50 employees, and now it's over 500. He was the head of finance for about 3 years from 2018 through 2021, up through then having a very successful SPAC at the end of 2021, so now a public company. So he's seen a lot. Before that, he was an FP&A at Novellus, so another big sustainability technology-focused company. So all that's to say, he has a ton of experience being on the buyer side of things, whether he was actually doing the procuring himself or he's had a team presenting to him trying to get his approval for a budget or for a software. This week, we're going to talk about a few different things. A couple highlights for me. One is how to enable your champion to go get a yes when they present and not get a, hey, go do more work. You've seen that happen a ton. Two is the art of the blind calendar invite, do's and don'ts. If you've never sent a blind calendar invite, or you do, definitely listen to see what works and what doesn't, what can frustrate someone. And then lastly, he's going to talk through a cold call that actually worked, why it worked, had him on the phone for 20, 30 minutes, and they said in follow-up meeting. So with all that said, let's dive in. Chris, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for joining us today.
What's up, man? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is a little known fact, but Chris was actually a Division I swimmer at Georgia, NCAA All-American. We actually used to race each other in high school growing up. We were both from North Carolina. We raced each other through college. There was even another USA national team alum, Mark Dilla, at Rubicon. So this is a small world coming in, but happy to have you.
Yeah, it's awesome to catch up, man.
Cool. Let's dive right in. Would you mind taking us through the best sales process that you've been a part of and maybe things that stuck out about it?
Yeah. Two sales processes recently come to mind for me that were real standouts. And for a little bit of context, in my finance role, most of what I'm procuring or what I'm the kind of end buyer for are software solutions or professional services. And so with professional services, we recently went through a SPAC merger process, and we engaged Deloitte ultimately for IPO advisory. And where Deloitte really distinguished themselves was doing their homework on the front end to understand the business. But I think for me specifically, to identify key pain points that were specific to Rubicon, right? Not trying to be everything for Rubicon, not trying to just like create this, you know, environment of a panacea, like, hey, we can come in and we can solve all of your problems. It was they took the time to zoom in on specific pain points, identify where they were strong, where they saw gaps for Rubicon, and how they were uniquely positioned. So they just did a very good job of getting to know the business beforehand and being, I guess, surgical in how they were approaching their solution for Rubicon. And so that to me was really differentiating. With professional services, a lot of the time, you know, you throw up all the tombstones, you throw up, you know, hundreds of years of managing director experience, but actually bringing it down to specific tangible problems, you know, sometimes there's a gap there. And so this was a real standout experience for us. And, you know, I think that just gave me a lot of comfort to move forward with them for such a critical project. And you know, I can say that they've lived up to that. And I think part of that is because they hit the ground running, having done a lot of that homework in advance.
Yeah. So you mentioned like they really personalized the solution towards what you're specifically as Rubicon trying to solve. So it sounds like my guess is their discovery process was really good. Maybe they're asking really good questions. I guess, do you have any examples of like where in the process you felt really comfortable that they got your business, whereas maybe other vendors didn't quite as much get it?
Yeah, I think the discovery portion was a big part of it. You know, we worked with other big four firms or evaluated other big four firms in this process. And, you know, a lot of people did homework here too. I think, you know, what Deloitte did so differently was they identified like, look, here are the areas that we see nuance to a SPAC versus an IPO where people fall down. Here's where overlaying that with here's what we see about Rubicon strengths and weaknesses. And then the critical piece was the last piece, overlaying that with here are Deloitte's strengths and weaknesses and being transparent about that. And to me, you know, the transparency around, hey, here's where we are really strong. Here's where we might bring in additional support. Here's where you're going to have to rely on, you know, your auditors, you're going to have to rely on your attorneys. That helped me like really conceptualize the process a little bit better than people just telling me, hey, it's all going to be good. We're, you know, we're going to take care of you. That approach was a little more neutered in my perspective.
I like that. So it's a mix of, they were able to portray to you, here's what we think of Rubicon strengths and weaknesses. And you're able to confirm, okay, you not only have you done your homework, you've been listening. And then they were very transparent and seemed credible on what they were strong and weak at. You've probably had enough experience where you have vendors come in and it's like, yes, we do that. Yes, we do that. Yeah, we're great at that. Yeah, we're the best at that. And at some point you're like, you can't be the best at everything.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. The other real standout, just to give you a different flavor, because this I've had this come up a few times and it's a huge differentiator for me. We recently procured Coupa software solution. And when they came to us, this was separate from the sales process, but it was going on concurrently. They came to us and they said, look, there are ways that we can help you outside of procurement. We can bring a commercial advantage to Rubicon by presenting you to our vast network and to our clients. And so that was really differentiating for me, is like, how can we help you out commercially, even beyond the specific function that our software provides? That was huge. That to me made it like, hey, this is a no-brainer. I was frankly a little reluctant to go down that path. It's an expensive software, and you know, we're still a smaller business. I thought maybe we can hold on for another year and kind of manage this internally. But when they kind of flipped the switch and were like, hey, we can bring value to you even outside of the software solution, then it totally changed the conversation for me.
Interesting. Is that something that you think help justify the cost of, hey, we'll do this cost a year from now, but you're like, hey, if this is the right solution and there's like a pretty immediate ROI from it, why not? Or can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, it just, I think it certainly helped justify the cost, but I think moreover, it just kind of, it got me over the hump. Whatever that kind of void is that you have to cross whenever you're trying to sell to someone or whenever you're being sold to, that immediately brought me over across that void and was like, okay, you know, I knew it made sense at some point. We were going to do this at some point anyway. Let's just go for it now. I feel really comfortable with these guys. And, you know, I'm excited that they feel like they're a real partner to the business.
Oh, that's cool. Is that something that they brought up maybe later in the process, middle of the process? Like, were you already hitting a hurdle when they brought it up, or did it just come up naturally?
No, I think we were just exploring it. We were kind of dipping our toes in, and then it did come up naturally. We had inbound from someone else at Coupa that said, hey, I've heard of Rubicon. I'm excited about your business, and I think we could help you. He's like, I know we're pitching to you, but you know, we want to help you any way we can, even outside of that. And so that was, you know, I don't know if that was a coordinated approach, but it certainly worked.
Got it. Oh, that's really cool. This may tie into that. Maybe this is the best example of that, but I'm curious, is there a time when maybe you paid more for a service or a software than maybe what the status quo was? And then how do you think about justifying, hey, this costs more, but we're going to get, you know, X, Y, Z out of it?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think the one that definitely comes to mind, I administer our Salesforce license at Rubicon. And you know, we've got a lot of CRM functionality built into our homegrown system. And so we're not using the full functionality of Salesforce, right? We're using this mostly for the sales pipeline management and some of the efficiencies that it creates within the sales process. And so there are other more streamlined, like kind of slimmed down solutions that were more economical. But we've got a history of working with Salesforce. And you know, I think we saw there's potential to grow with them over time that maybe isn't there with some of the more streamlined offerings. And so it was kind of thinking long-term of like, hey, even though we're not using the full suite today, this is a company that's got a history of innovating, of acquiring other companies to add to their functionality. And maybe down the road, you know, we don't know what we will want in 2 or 3 years, but I feel confident that Salesforce can offer that to us. So that, yeah. that was thinking more long term than short term.
Yeah. Is that something, if you remember, did the rep or the Salesforce team help you think through that? Because you're like, hey, yeah, you're not going to use all the functionality right now, but if you want something that's going to scale and do with you long term, you might as well do it now. Is that something they helped align with you on, or was that, you know, just how your mind thinks?
They did, yeah. That was very rep driven, and frankly, not mm-hmm. where my head was at prior to driving us in this direction. And I'm not a big conference guy, but we went to the Salesforce, the big event. I'm blanking on kind of the annual.
Dreamforce, yeah.
Dreamforce, yeah, the annual event that they had, and you know, seeing the breadth of the ecosystem in connection with the way that the rep was pushing us was really what eliminated that for me.
Interesting. Do you remember how that comes up? Because you probably had, hey, this is what I need, and they're like, well, we can do this, and it's expensive, and we do so much more. Like, is it just in conversation? Are they like sending you things that help that narrative on scalability and thinking long term?
You know, we had already gone down a path of doing more of an RFP event. We had other offers for more streamlined functionality, and we took that to them and said, "Look, help us justify why we're going to pay, you know, $90 a month more per license with you guys than what we were paying for, you know, bare bones kind of pipeline management functionality."
Yep.
And so that really teed them up to show us some of the things that they're doing on, you know, pipeline acceleration tools, other things that they're doing to kind of, you know, facilitate sales ops, and then some of the more big picture stuff that they're doing further downstream within their platform.
Got it. Okay. Oh, that's great. I feel like most of the companies I've worked for before, and a lot of these more modern age tech companies, it's, hey, it's going to cost more, but you get more. So it's like, are these just features I actually need or care about? Or is there a purpose to the cost, either right now or scalability or future or things like that? So it's cool to hear how you think about that and how they were able to help enable that. Chris, you've been in the buyer seat for quite a while. I mean, you're the head of finance for about 3 years there at Rubicon. So I'm curious if someone on your team or maybe even another department is coming to you for budget approval and saying, hey, I'd really like to move forward with this vendor service. What goes on in your head? What are you looking for that makes you say yes or no?
The reason I love this question, the reason I'm smiling is because this is an instance of like, do as I say, not as I do.
Okay.
When someone comes to me with a procurement request, I like to see that they've done their homework and they've evaluated multiple options. And I'm pretty bad about doing that, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
When I get a good gut feeling about a solution or a vendor, I tend to trust my gut and go all in on that. But with someone coming to me, when I don't have that kind of direct experience, it's important to me to have seen that they've evaluated multiple options and really presented a case as to why this is the superior outcome. I get frustrated when I see that someone, you know, has kind of already chosen a single path that they wanted to.
Got it. How in depth maybe is your expectation there? Is it, hey, Chris, I looked at three options, here's the one I want, or is it, here are the three options, here's the pros and cons of each, here's why I think, you know, vendor X is the best. Like how in depth do you expect it?
Yeah, more of the latter. I don't need usually to be kind of a fully baked ROI case beyond, you know, below a certain threshold, of course. But at least kind of pros and cons, short, medium, long term, is usually what I like to look at.
Got it. Is that often like a next step if someone comes to you and you're not quite there yet? It's, hey, could you go back and really make sure you're evaluating other vendors and doing some more due diligence?
That's right. Yeah, that'll usually be my push back to someone for follow up.
Got it. Okay, cool. I want to move to pet peeves. So I think you've interacted with plenty of salespeople in your career, myself being one of them.
Yeah.
So I'm curious.
I didn't want to butter you up too much.
I'm curious on any pet peeves that stick out, right? Because anything that might hurt someone's chances of either scoring a meeting or moving forward in the process or eventually becoming a customer, like, is there anything that sticks out that maybe rubs you the wrong way and might turn you off to a solution, even if it could be a good fit?
Yeah. There's, there's two things. One's a big one, and I've seen it with surprisingly sophisticated organizations. I don't want to call anybody out, but
yeah, it's a safe space.
The worst pet peeve for me is when I'll get a blind calendar invite with someone I've not spoken to that just says, "Hey, hoping this is a free time on your calendar that we can discuss XYZ solution." That I'm just like, oh, you know, screw this guy. I'm not entertaining this. It's a little too forward to me. That's the first one. That's the worst one for me.
Okay.
Littler thing that just kind of triggers me a little bit is, I manage my inbox very well. So this is kind of a personal one. Like, I'm zero inbox kind of guy.
Yeah.
And if there's a sales rep following up a few times where it's like, hey, maybe you didn't see my prior email, or hey, just bumping this, don't think you saw my email. It's like, no, I saw it. I'm a little busy. I'll get back to you when it makes sense. So that just kind of rubs me the wrong way. That one line in opening an email.
Okay. So I guess maybe is the takeaway, like, get to the point of the email. What's the value? Either what's the ask or what's the value you're providing? Less of the fluff at the beginning. Hey, just bumping this up. Maybe you didn't see this. And you're like, well, of course I saw this. And I might discount the rest of your email. Is that right?
Yeah. And, you know, I guess on the flip side, sending collateral along with an email, which actually you all did, it is really helpful for me too. I like when I'm, individually doing the procuring, even in my personal life outside of work, I like to do my reading. I like to do my homework in advance of an initial call. And so sending some kind of collateral or a link to a video in the email is something that's very helpful for me.
Am I right in guessing that that's good for cold outreach? But even if you have a first meeting coming up or a second meeting coming up, hey, really excited to speak to you. Here's, a couple of things you could read through if you want. And you'd be like, absolutely, thank you.
But yeah, both. But okay. Especially with a cold email, I'm so much more likely to lean into it if there's an attachment or a clear link to collateral, not just to the website, but to some piece of collateral that I can read through or watch.
Ah, okay. Love that. If you don't mind for a second, I'm going to go back to the blind calendar invite. Yeah. Something I've like coached some of my teams through is, let's say we're engaged in a sales process and we've loosely agreed to a next step. Hey, we're going to like grab some time next week. Send me some stuff over. And then maybe it's been a few days and you haven't responded. Often I'll guide my team. Hey, like if they haven't responded after a call and a couple of emails, now let's throw a calendar invite just to see if that time works, or maybe get a response, and maybe they're not interested anymore, or maybe they're just really busy. How much does that rub you the wrong way versus a completely cold calendar invite?
No, that doesn't rub me the wrong way. If we've already had that initial call, that's cool. I don't get the same kind of triggering off of that.
Okay, cool. Cold calls, everybody's favorite thing to do and favorite thing to receive. I'm curious if anything comes to memory as far as a cold call, maybe that was successful. Maybe they got a meeting or got you interested in something. Anything come to mind there?
Yeah, one recently actually, and it comes to mind because it's so unusual. I don't typically answer the phone if I don't recognize the name. And this one, I took it because I thought I recognized the caller ID name. And in fact, I didn't. But this person had done, and I guess this goes back to my theme with Deloitte, this person had done so much homework on specific pain points with Rubicon and hit it right away that I stuck on the phone. We hung on the phone for like 20, 30 minutes. Ultimately, the solution didn't work out for us based on other constraints we had, but it was a great sales experience. And this person just went straight to the point of like, hey, I know you're busy. I'm guessing you're running into this problem. Here's why we're uniquely positioned to help solve that problem. One of the few cold calls that I've taken and then also just been on the hook.
Right. Do you remember what their hook was? Did they really get into it? Hey, I know you're busy. So they acknowledge like this is a cold call. And then they're as quickly as possible showing you the research they've done and building relevancy. Is that right?
It was, yeah. And I think really hitting home the research that they've done, just for me, it was like, okay, this person's put in a lot of work here. I respect that. Mm. I respect the initiative. You know, I'm going to meet them halfway on this. And it was a company that does, they're a private shares marketplace for startup type companies. And they had read through our S4 filing, our initial filing for this SPAC process. And I was like, you know what, for a sales rep to have gone through and read SEC regulatory filings, that's, you know, that's a lot of homework. Like, bravo, I'm going to sit through this.
Got it. Were they mostly correct in their assumptions? Did that help? Or was it just like the fact that they put in the work?
I think this is hypothetical, but I think I'm likely to give someone credit just for the respect of putting in that work. Mm. This individual was very correct in their insights. And so that probably made it all the more easy to stay on the phone for longer.
Got it. Do you think it's the same for emails? I'm sure like your inbox zero, so you get a ton. So is it as quickly as possible showing they've done the work and research? Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. The tighter the better. Just like jump into kind of problem identification and solution. Sorry, one other pet peeve that I wanted to
bring.
Sorry. So I get a surprising amount of this and did all the more so when we were in office and before we were remote. But people sending swag or even just like little gifts like cookies or a bottle of wine or something like that, it's a nice gesture. I understand where that comes from. But for a sustainability oriented company with a stated mission to end waste, especially sending the swag, which at Rubicon we call landfill fodder. It's, you know, things that can't really be recycled. It doesn't look good.
That's such a good point on a couple of different levels. I think one, it ties back to doing your research and knowing who you're trying to work with. And then the second is, you know, does that gesture add value towards creating a meeting, or is it just like an extra trick up your sleeve to try to get attention?
Right.
Versus the,
and you know, I don't think it's as impactful as the people sending it, but it will be.
Yeah. And I bet my guess is even if you send swag and that makes you go check the email or the voicemail or whatever, or the collateral, if it's not relevant, they haven't done their work there, you're still not going to take a meeting. So it's like step one, do your research, make sure you understand the company and the problems you're trying to solve for them. And then the rest is great, but without step one, nothing else matters.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Well, that might tie into how I love to wrap up. I really want to hear your take on Rubicon. You guys have had an exciting tenure, and especially with the SPAC a couple months ago. But can you just tell us a little bit about Rubicon and what's so exciting about being there?
Yeah, thanks, man. So Rubicon is a digital marketplace for waste and recycling. And we're running a play that's no different from the likes of Uber or Airbnb have run in other industry verticals. We don't own any of the trucks. We don't own any of the landfills. We're just making markets, connecting waste generators with the haulers and recyclers in their local markets. And what's really interesting about this model is because we don't own the assets, we're not incentivized to overutilize the fleet. We're not incentivized to bury trash in the ground and basically direct those volumes to the disposal assets that we own. And so we can be more creative about the end of life solution. And I think the receipts really, really detail that. The recycling rates that we're able to achieve for our customers are about three times what you see in the rest of the industry. And so it's a really interesting way where if you find the right incentives and you align your incentives with the customer, with the environment, you can create a solution that is superior and, you know, achieves the same kind of economics that a traditional vertically integrated model might achieve. And so what I'm really excited about, whether it's, you know, because of this fact or just the organic growth in this business, is, you know, we're able to deliver these kind of outcomes for our customers. Customers that have been with us over multiple contract cycles, we're able to deliver recycling rates that are, you know, 60, 70, 80%. And, you know, that's unusual here in the States. And so we deliver the kind of software solutions that allow our waste generator customers to think, you know, more strategically about their waste stream. It can create efficiencies within their supply chain. And then also help them report out to their shareholders and other stakeholders about their ESG metrics as it pertains to waste and recycling.
Mm. Wow, that's really impactful.
It's what's kept me here. You know, I've been here now for 7 years, and you know, with the being at a startup, it's been a roller coaster, right? But kind of being able to reorient around a bona fide environmental mission has been a really, you know, really impactful thing in my career, and something that's kept me excited over the long haul here at Rubicon.
Yeah. And to see that impact from when you joined, and there's about 50 people, now there's 500 plus through a SPAC. That's pretty incredible, man.
Yeah. Thank you.
Cool. Well, Chris, thanks so much for joining us this week. And I guess if anybody wants to get in touch with you, where's maybe the best spot?
Yeah. Just reach out to me, chris.spooner@rubicon.com. Check out our website, rubicon.com, tell you more about the business. If you're a waste generator, which everybody's got trash, come check us out. It's a better mousetrap, and we can create real economic value from your waste stream.
Love it. All right. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks a lot, Eugene. Good seeing you, man.